The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the views or endorsement of any entity. Nothing being said on this podcast should be considered as investment advice.
GM, GM, welcome to 100 Proof. This is your weekly show covering all things NFTs. And I am joined here by the one and only Amanda. It is so great to have you.
I'm glad to have a little upgrade today. I know that Derek's out of town, and someone asked me if I could just come sit down, and I'm here for it.
This I love
is cool.
It.
It's comfy.
Yeah, and for people that don't know, you're kind of our head of all things culture and community, which is great. Mm-hmm. And you have your own little secret show you might be working on, which is going to be fun as well.
Yeah.
There's a little alpha there.
Yeah.
Also, Sam's here. NFT Stats. He shortened his name. Sam, Director of Research at Proof. Good to have you here.
What is up? Yeah, I have wanted that. I've wanted NFT Stats for a long time, and it was taken, and then whoever had it just let it expire. So I picked it up, and I'm no longer NFT Statistics. I'm not NFT Stats. Good to be here.
So much easier to say for me. For some reason, that's a really you know how you have those words that you just can't? Yeah. I've always called them NFT Stats, so it's nice that that's the case. So. Awesome. Well, we are stoked to be here. This is going to be a fun show. We've got a lot to cover. We are going to be covering our one ETH picks today, which is great. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
I think we've got some fun ones.
I'm really excited for it because I've always wanted, this is always like my favorite little segment just because I think, you know, there's so much good art and so many good projects under one ETH. So I think it'll be really fun to dive into that.
Yeah, and we're also going to be covering a little bit about Blur's recent changes. We also have, we're going to be covering Jack Butcher's whole ecosystem and chatting about that as well. My friend calls him Jack the Butcher, which I like
it. It's perfect, actually.
It's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And then we've got a latest episode of Mythic's Chronicles, which is going to be great. It's a really fun episode that Mal cut together. We'll see here shortly. And of course, follow us we are on Twitter under Proof Podcasts. And if that is all the latest content from Proof, that's just the content. So if you turn on the subscribe button and notifications button, you'll get a little push notification on your phone. Anytime we produce any new piece of audio video content, goes right out there. So, all right. So for also a quick reminder, if you're listening to this on Spaces, and you're wondering why we're talking about so many different visual things, it's because this is a visual podcast and we have a live stream going on right now on YouTube. So the bulk of people are over on YouTube watching it there. You can join us and do we have to do short link for YouTube? We need our own little tiny short link for that.
We should. I hope we do, but maybe not. But just look us up at Proof. You should be able to find us, subscribe, make it nice and easy for you. I'm going to be doing double duty as, you know, my role is social chair to read all the comments. So I'm here. I'm going to be co-hosting with you. I'm going to be reading your comments. It's going to be a fun one. It's Friday. We'll have fun.
It's Friday. Do we have a shoe check-in? Because Derek and I normally do shoe check-ins. Did you bring anything awesome today?
I mean, you know, just a classic beat up Jordan 1s, Lowe's.
Love it.
Not bad, not bad. Oh, nice. Are those the Tiffany ones?
They got the Tiffany ones. Yeah,
decided to go
Tiffany. So those are.
I didn't even know we were both rocking those. But those are what, Air Force 1s?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Nice.
Little Derek typically brings the thunder when we do the show.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a classic right there.
All right. Well, let's start off by talking about last night. You and I were on a podcast that turned a professional wrestling match / podcast. It was a wild night.
It was a wild night. Shout out to Began. Sorry, I'm such a plebe here. I don't know how to do this. Let's do this.
It's okay.
Such a plebe.
Take your time. Right. We've got a little. There we go.
Shout out to Began, who is a Proof Collective member. And a moonbird has been here from the beginning, has been working on IRL Alpha, which is an IRL show in Venice, out of this beautiful, like, cool studio, this old school studio with, like, you know, art from all over from, you know, decades and decades ago. Yeah. It's like a really funky spot. And it's just like, it's not about any certain specific community. So it's just a culmination of everyone who just loves NFTs. A lot of really spicy takes. We had Patrick Amadon as one of the people who was on our panel. We had Bearsnake from Forgotten Runes. You guys should check it out. There's a Twitch stream. I think it's twitch.tv/beganbot, where you can watch the replay. But why don't you tell us what happened
there? Yeah, I mean, the thing I didn't know walking into this, I was like, okay, what's this show all about? You're like you got to come, like, blah, blah, blah. And everyone was so friendly and so full of energy. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of a rowdy crowd.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was like, I haven't been to a podcast like this in a while, you know? And it was like, the crowd was spicy. There was, you know, there was substances going around. There was beers and there was like smoke of weed going on. The thing. Everybody started getting crazy. And there were like hecklers from the audience. And it was like, it was just actually a lot of fun. When I walked out of there, I was like, more podcasts need to be like this. Because I just didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I seriously thought people would like rush the stage at one point, or like, it was just... It was just chaos in all the right ways.
It was perfectly unhinged, is what I've been saying.
Yeah.
Like, it was just perfect. Like, I don't think that we could have planned that better. You know, there was a hot topic. Shout out to that woman in the back who really wanted to get her question asked and answered about CC0, and she kept pushing it. And
she came at me four different times. She just kept getting the mic, and it was. It was kind of amazing. Actually, I thought it was one of the funniest moments because it was the same question over and over again.
It was amazing. She came out and we were talking about ETH versus Tez. And she was like, I'm an ETH maxi. Kevin, I have a question for you. Why CC0? Like, it was just like, it wasn't even like a nice, smooth transition. It was perfect. But shout out to Patrick Almadon, who is a CC0 artist himself. And Bearsnake from Forgotten Ruins. I don't think they're CC0, but they're like, you know, they're just sort of pro Web3 culture and all of that. And so I think that it actually made us, it was a really interesting moment because it was basically like listening to the worst FUD, but in real life. And then you realize kind of how silly it can be sometimes. So I think it made us look pretty good. So shout out to all of that.
Yeah, Patrick is awesome, by the way, as an artist and just as a thinker in the space. And he has a lot of spicy hot takes, which was fun to hear.
Yeah, he's fun. He's an Outliers artist. And did a really awesome new contract called Doppelganger. He's already kind of in our world, and I hope that we get to just like hang out with him a little bit more because he's in LA. So,
yeah, Sam, cool. Sam, you were missed, man. We wish you were there for that event. I know you're in Wisconsin. I don't know what you're doing out there, milking cows or some shit, but you should have been here.
You know what's funny? I actually did at my old company that I was working at before this. I was doing a photo shoot in LA. And we went to this apartment building, and I saw a guy with a Bored Ape Yacht Club sweatshirt at that apartment. I started talking to him. I think it was BeganBot. So
really?
I
had that's guy amazing. Before,
amazing.
Like a year, like not like a year and a half ago, in some random apartment building in LA. So if he's out there listening,
that's
nice
awesome.
Meeting you a year and a half ago, yeah.
He's got some serious energy.
Yeah, he does.
I was like, I sat next to him, and they're like, actually, when I walked out afterwards, and I was like getting ready to leave. And they're like, he's always like that. He's just got just insane amounts of energy that just flows. And I'm like, I'm so jealous.
I know. It's like a Justin type of energy, but on a different, maybe even sped up a little bit, like a couple,
it's
couple
like
notches.
If Justin had like a triple espresso.
Yeah.
Like that's what was happening. It was pretty awesome.
It was great.
All right, so Sam, let's talk about the market, man. I mean, this morning was crazy. I looked at the market, I was like, holy shit, like things are pumping, like some of our stuff. And like, so what
was Inazuki, yeah.
Yeah, what's new, Sam?
Man, it has been an absolutely insane week. I think, you know, last weekend, what was pretty much the worst weekend, I think, on record for NFTs. I mean, you had projects across the board just completely tanked. I think that there was kind of this environment where people generally assume that projects aren't going to be going down more than like 5% a day. And a lot of that was because just the way that the incentive structures are out there, you know, when projects get a lot of volume, that's when bidders want to come in and earn points. And you kind of had this paradigm where it was pretty safe to lend 15% below floor because you could unwind that. Or it's pretty safe to bid for a lot of NFTs, you know, a few percent below floor because then you could just sell them to the next guy. And things weren't moving all that quickly. And then suddenly with Azuki and everything that happened, like, you know, we had 15% moves in one day and people lost a lot of money. The the bids kind of came out and everything just completely crashed. So that was last weekend. And, you know, then you kind of had a little bit of a rebound and pretty steady. And then this morning, just things ripped again. So, you know, I mean, my entire screen pretty much is green. You know, prices are up and you're not seeing people dumping into bids. It's almost all kind of new buyers. So, you know, there is a nice new buyer confidence that is certainly happening today on Friday. So we'll see how long this lasts, but you kind of love to see it after what was really a painful weekend about a week ago. So I think that's kind of like the basic on the price action. Like when looking at art blocks, when looking at one of one sales, art blocks, like while everything was crashing, art blocks didn't as much. And I think a lot of that was, art blocks floors really rose a lot with that first Sotheby's auction. And ever since then, they've just pretty much been flat. There hasn't been a lot of volume, but they've pretty much been flat. You know, so you haven't really seen kind of all the movement that you've seen in other projects. And, one-of-ones have been really quiet. You know, I was for this morning's show, I basically had no one-of-one sales to talk about. Like, there's pretty much nothing that happened in the past 24 hours above 2 ETH. So
one question about the art blocks.
It's really slowed down.
Yeah. One question for you, Sam, about the art block side of things. How much, I know they're not blocking zero fee royalty sites, but they also have a funky contract, so it's been harder for some of these zero royalty sites to kind of incorporate art blocks. How much of that do you think is just because there's not, the liquid market, say, of a Blur behind the scenes on art blocks that you can't really dump into it, right? So is that part of, and then also you have to imagine there's a collector mindset with art blocks that's there for the art. They're not there to, they're probably a little bit more long-term holder focused, I would say. Do you think those two factors play a part, or what's your take?
I think it's hard to say. I mean, art block, like Chromie Squiggles are probably the best parallel because it's a 10,000 piece collection. They're always buyers and sellers. Like, I think, yes, people are long-term holders, but at the end of the day, they're buyers and sellers for everything when they're 10,000. So I don't think it's too fundamentally different, but maybe a little bit. But yeah, I think it certainly helps that you don't have this dynamic that you have with other projects where there's always the fear that someone's going to dump a ton of NFTs on you. That's kind of lingering there. So, I've been pretty outspoken that I think that the incentivized bidding process has transferred a lot of supply to people who have zero interest in holding them in a bit of an artificial way. And I think that that Chromie Squiggles not having to deal with that, like, just removes that overhang for the project. So I think that's certainly a positive, and I think that's helped over the past couple months. That said, Chromie Squiggles, when everything was dumping Chromie Squiggles, like whenever everything's basically dumped nonstop since February, which was when incentivized bidding started, but when from February to May, when you were really seeing, that was when Moonbirds were weak, Doodles were weak, Bored Ape Yacht Club's basically been down only since then until, with a couple jump ups, Chromie Squiggles were weak as well. So you were seeing some of the negativity kind of spill over even into collections that didn't have incentivized bidding. But the past few months, they've held up a little bit better. I'm sorry, the past few weeks since that Sotheby's auction.
When you said everything was green today and it was just, which is always nice to see, how much of that is kind of new wallets coming into the space? Are we talking about the same amount of unique wallets actually buying these, or are we seeing some uniques take up as well?
I one of the cool things that's happening is if you look at who the buyers are, it is a diversity of wallets. So it's not a thing where, who knows? I think that most of the buyers still tend to be kind of flippers and short-term players, but you're at least seeing a pretty wide breadth of wallets. I will say it is harder to wallet track right now because, BenDAO, between BenDAO, Paraspace, and Blend, a lot of Bored Apes, a lot of Azukis, a lot of Mutant Apes are being held by single wallets that just hold all the lending kind of NFTs. So when people are looking at charts of Bored Ape unique holders, and it's certainly been going up over the past few weeks, but a lot of those charts you have to be careful with because, if people put you kind of into Blend, and it's very rational to borrow money on Blend because you can do it at 0% and limit your risk and get some ETH back. When people do that, that's transferring NFTs to the Blend wallet, which holds all of the levered Bored Apes. And so the unique owner numbers that almost every Dune dashboard is going to show you have a little bit of a kink there. It is a little bit hard to drive too much information from them because it also reflects kind of how many are actually being held versus how many actually have loans against them. And so many people are taking loans, especially given you can do it at 0%. So it's just, there's no real reason not to at some level.
So Sam, I know you're still out in Wisconsin. Are you still farming yourself, or have you stopped?
I only like to do the airdrop farming for like two reasons. One is because it helps me learn. I'm certainly an outspoken commentator on exchanges and different products and how they impact the market. But I also I've got like 7,000 airdrop farming points through lending, and I haven't lost a single ETH. Like, I haven't lost anything. It's all been very low risk. So I tend to lend when I think like you can kind of do it in very low risk ways. Lending 30% below the floor and you can unwind it in a day, that tends to be a pretty low risk way to lend on Blend. So I do it. Yeah. I think I still have I've gotten like 50 points in the past couple days. I used to be getting like hundreds. So I've definitely calmed down because it doesn't feel quite as low risk right now as it used to, but I still mess around with it, get my occasional dopamine hit.
Yeah. What's your latest? Are you buying? Are you just holding your bags, Amanda? Are you doing any blend action or any
I'm
blur action?
I'm definitely not doing like blur blend like farming. I can't do it. I don't have the time to like sit and watch it. Like I couldn't do it. And so, I mean, I think over the last year, I've just been finding things that I can just like sit and hold, you know? The last thing I did buy, I know we're going to talk about this later, but I did buy OPEPENs like 2 or 3 days ago. So one of the easier ones that I've done is one of the easiest ways I think to make money is like understand a collection, especially one that has volume, and just swing it. And so I've just been swinging it pretty much since it's come out. Like you find a good spot that you feel like is a good place to take profit and come back, wait for it to dip and write it back up again.
I knew that DGEN was going to come out eventually.
Oh, it's there. Oh, it's
because
there.
I thought
I'm just
you
trying
lost
to be
it.
Smart. Oh no.
Because when we talked first, so when we first met, we first started hanging out, you were like full DGEN. You were
complete
like
paper hand. I'll sell anything.
Losing everything.
Yeah. And losing money, really.
Losing money. And then you put your art hat on. You started collecting and holding for the long term. And now it's good to see a little of that DGEN back.
Yeah. Just a little bit. You know, I have, 90% completely illiquid art. And then you got to save a little bit of your portfolio for some fun. And OPEPEN's a good one. I don't think I could do like the, Dalton War Daddy, was convincing me about Mafia Nuts. You know, like there's like certain things, there's this project called Mafia Nuts. Like there's certain like cheesy, PFP things that are just like easy flips that I just can't touch anymore, but it's fine. I'm here for it. People make money, that way and then buy art. So good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here for it.
All right.
Well, one of the interesting things that happened is NFT Perp, who is behind Mafia Nuts, yesterday announced that they're basically ending their V1 platform. So I just had a look at Mafia Nuts. It still has a 0.2 ETH floor, but I find that a little surprising given they kind of surprisingly and without expecting, some people kind of saw it coming, but they basically shut down their platform. And they say, like, get ready for V2, but V2 is paper trading. So it's not actually even people trading for real money. Mm.
Sam, when you look at the market and you see all this stuff happening, you see these projects tanking and, at some point in time, do you get brought into the fold and think like, oh damn, like I've been wanting to pick up say an Azuki or something on the cheap. Like, have you done any buying?
I've been doing a little bit of like the lending here and there, but my view, and I've been outspoken on this, is I think like, and I think we're seeing incentivized bidding die down, but I think as long as there's incentivized bidding, I want to wait. I want to go back to an environment where you can buy and you don't worry about people who are paid money, which compensates them for losses they take, or you don't worry about someone kind of in the wings getting ready to dump 50 doodles on you, which, almost happened to me the last time I was looking to buy an NFT. I think some of those dynamics, and what we are seeing is on like 1x projects, like 1x points, like V1 Punks, for example, or World of Women. And I did buy one of your V1 Punks, so I guess I did buy one. But I think like in some of those projects where they don't earn as much points, you are seeing airdrop farmers move away. And I'm starting to get a little bit more comfortable with those. But I think with these other projects, I really have a strong view that the dynamic that happens with all the pump and dumping and that comes with incentivized bidding, like it just makes it like a less pleasant place to be. And I think that it kind of creates a big headwind. So I generally, and you miss things like this rally that Bored Apes have had, but overall it's saved me a lot of money. It led me to sell a lot of NFTs a few months ago when I saw this dynamic forming, and overall it's been probably a decent strategy.
I'm curious, Sam, you know, this kind of leads us into, dovetails into the next, you know, recent piece of news, which is Blur adding trait-specific bidding. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what is, I know it's like early days, and there's a lot of conflicting opinions out there, whether this is good for the ecosystem or bad. You know, you're such a data-driven person. I would love to know, are you seeing any hints at the impact that this is having?
Yeah, I'm curious to find out if, because I think yesterday we were talking about it, it felt quite bearish. And then all of a sudden today we have a super green day. I'm wondering how many of those sales maybe took advantage of the trait bidding. How many of these like big green sales are above the floor just because now they can and they're incentivized to go above the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think net-net, I'd probably say that trait bidding is neutral or slightly positive. And I think I don't think it moves the needle a ton. What it does do is it removes some of that incentive to put on these constant collection bids, you know? And I think when there was so much incentive, and I think we're seeing that, I think we saw that go away for two reasons. One is, I shouldn't say we saw it go away. I think we might start to see it die down for a couple of reasons. One is that now there's trait bidding, and you know, and Blur has said that trait bidding is going to take some of the points away from collection bidding. So it's not going to add more points that you can earn bidding on Azuki or Clone X or Doodles or any of those projects. It is going to take some from the collection and move it to traits. And I just think that's good because there's been so much activity just around the floor. You know, tons of people bidding, tons of PvP, you know, player versus player, tons of pumping and dumping, you know, a lot of non-floor NFTs start getting dumped into the floor. And overall, I just think it's been a pretty unhealthy dynamic for the ecosystem. Right now, you're at least getting to spread that out. This world where everything's a floor could perhaps start to transform a little bit. You know, maybe we start to see a little bit more kind of people taking advantage of some of the more scarce and rare NFTs that are in collections. So I think that that's net a positive. And I think just removing some of the incentive to constantly be kind of bidding on the floors is also a positive. One of the evolutions that we've seen over time, though, is that the airdrop farmers have gotten a little bit less aggressive. You know, in the beginning of Bored Apes, there was the very famous Mando and OSF trade, which was really just Mando and OSF taking advantage of Machi, Big Brother, putting in a very dumb bid. You know, he put in a bid for 100 Bored Apes, well above the price that they should have been, and he ended up losing $1.5 million as a result of that.
Wow.
And he did pretty much the same thing on Punks, where he lost over $1 million by overbidding on Punks. You know, and it took literally 3 to 4 months for the market to digest those NFTs that he got, because he dumps them and then there's no real buyer and everyone sees that these NFTs just keep getting dumped over and over again. And no one wants to step in, because when there are 100 Punks, 100 Bored Apes kind of in that vortex, you know, you'll have a chance to buy it later for cheaper. So price just goes lower and lower. I think what we saw with D-Gods, which was that the farmers weren't that aggressive. You know, farmers didn't really come out and crazy bid for D-Gods. So you didn't get this mass transfer into what I call the vortex of people dumping on each other. And I think right now people really don't want to get stuck overpaying for a trade. Like people really, because they know that's going to be hard to dump to the next guy. So you have seen like, that until now, like trait bids have actually not had a big impact on the market. You see the occasional one here or there where someone sees like a nice trait and you can bid like 0.1 ETH above floor, and instead of dumping floor, you get it, and then you can, you know, sell it for a 0.5 ETH profit. You're seeing a few of those. You've seen a couple grails where people who actually want to hold go in and bid. So a D-God sold, I think, for 40 ETH, and a Bored Ape King's Robe sold for 40 ETH. But like broadly speaking, you know, the big players haven't been very active in this because I think they know most of the big players don't want NFTs. They just want Blur points, you know, so they know if they get stuck with one of these, they might not be able to get out. So you really haven't seen it really take over yet. I think it's going to take time for maybe new players like you or me, you know, who actually want to use it for the right reasons to kind of recognize it and start to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this in our community, especially like on Market Talk, on Discord, and we've talked about to people if they were participating in all of this, and a lot of them are really kind of just staying away. I think it's a scary time if you are, you know, a smaller consumer, I guess, and it's hard to kind of to say you want to start playing in this. And so I think with the way that you're doing it obviously is really cool, but I'm not seeing a lot of people who have kind of thoughts and experiences doing this, because I think it's a little complicated, right? But I will say Dave Baczynski says solid pick on the V1. This has nothing to do with Blur, but I actually do think like V1 punks, like they are cool. I feel like every time anyone ever mentions a V1 punk, like there's somebody who comes in that is like, yeah, like V1 punks are legit, you know? So I actually wouldn't mind like double tapping on like, why did you buy one? Like, I know why Kevin buys one, because you are very...
No, I didn't
like,
buy any.
Why you had one.
Yeah.
You had them. Yeah. Okay. So then you didn't even go in and buy them. But Sam, why did you buy one?
I bought one because I have two punks, Punk 959, which is my name, and then my PFP. And Punk 959 is not my PFP. And then when I saw Blur Airdrop Farming happen, I sold everything, right? Like 3 weeks ago, I basically, not 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago, I just got like all those pictures on the back of my wall, I sold them all. Cause I was like, this incentivized bidding thing is just going to be really hard for NFTs.
Wait, you sold your Dower Darcel?
Thanks for the heads up, dude.
Sold your Dower Darcel? Oh my God.
I've been talking about this forever. The Dower Darcels were already worth zero. So I have a massive Darcel bag, like, unfortunately. But I sold one of my V1 punks because I remember like Franklin once came in and pumped punk floor up, V1 punk floor up to six. And of course he was going to dump them all. I was like, all right, I'll dump them, add to the vortex here. But at the end of the day, the project stopped being Airdrop Farm. I kind of like the idea of having two of each. And then Kevin kind of found all these ones that he really loved. And one of them I just really liked. So I was like, hey, I'll buy that one from Kevin. But I would say, yeah. So that was just kind of a one-off
there.
Because I had sold one at a lot higher, and I kind of wanted to get back to that even balance. And Kevin had one I really like, so that was that. But I think to the point about being scared, you know, with Doodles is a collection I've always wanted to own three, because I have three kids and I wanted one for each of them. And I owned one Doodle and went to buy two more. And as I was looking around, someone dumped 80 of them. And my next move was I said, the person who bought these from the person who dumped them is also going to dump, because no real holder puts in a bid for 80 and gets dumped. You know, like this is another Airdrop Farmer, now it's 80. So I need to sell mine before he does. And it actually turned me from a buyer into a seller, because I saw 80 get dumped. I knew the person who got dumped on, was going to dump too. And there were people getting paid to bid on mine. So I dumped mine and more got added to the vortex. So I think that's kind of an example. That's kind of an example of the impact that people have, I think, when the whole marketplace is this player versus player world.
Yeah, I mean, we had a very active and amazing and wonderful community member who just basically sold his entire bag of NFTs. He was feeling incredibly bullish and hopeful and understanding of like what it means to be long term here, and was aware of all of it. And I think one day he just snapped. I think that was the trait bidding thing with Blur. Or even this concept that season two will never end. And I think he just got tired of it and was just like, I'm done. Like, I'll come back when I feel like there's people who are actually buying, but like, I have to just sell everything. And like, even I saw this Moonbird, this leather jacket Moonbird, black, all black, just murdered out, beautiful one for 1.4. And I had my finger on it for over the last couple of days. And to be honest, like it was a little nerve wracking. And now I feel the FOMO because of course we're a lot higher than that, but that's on me. But I think that right now, this is the season for anyone who either has like no fear or full conviction or is a little, you know, wants to gamble a little bit, you know? And so that's a hard one.
Yeah, there's a few things that I'm sitting back really wanting to pick up. And I'm just like, I don't want to catch a falling knife. Like no one does, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there and one of the things I'm still really pissed at, I actually just got off a call earlier with Tyler Hobbs today, and it reminded me that I lost my QQL in that hack.
Oh yeah.
And I desperately wanted QQL, and I haven't gone back and picked one up. And
you know who keeps buying them?
Who keeps buying them?
Machi.
No way.
Yes.
I did not know
yes.
that.
Yes, Machi has 45. A bunch of them, right? 45.
He owns 45.
So what's the point there? Is the point just the farm or the
No,
QQLs are blocked from Blur.
Yeah, he still owns them.
He just owns
them. I don't know why. And that's kind of
ruined it for me. They're
not
blocked from Blur. They're not blocked from Blur. They just have
Royalty
Enforced. They're not blocked. I think they might not even have Royalty Enforced. But I think he minted a bunch of them, and it's a weird one because he's held these for 6 months and he's kind of like buy only. So he's not really tracking his normal behavior of luring in bids and dumping a ton of NFTs on those bidders. And it's a little bit of a new trend for him.
Does he ever come on and talk about this stuff?
He does. He's on Spaces and stuff. He talks about it.
Okay.
He sometimes I'll tweet like Machi's down $1 million, something I generally don't love to tweet, but people are deciding to do everything from public wallets, you know, so it's kind of part of what they sign up for a little bit. And he'll like those tweets. Like,
don't give a fuck. Like, you're just I've done $1 million. Like, to be in that space, it's crazy.
It's wild.
I'm pretty convinced that, like, people like, he's going to find out how much he loses after, like, the token drops. And I'm kind of like, I don't even think he's keeping track. Right. I think he, like, this guy actually just is not bookkeeping how much he's down. Yeah. But it kind of does bring me to the other thing I want to mention, which was that in the thread announcing kind of trade bidding, they also said that season two airdrop farming basically has no end in sight. You know, they said that this season that we have three more tech releases ahead of it. We're not even going to give you any visibility on when this is over. We'll give you the visibility later. And they said that seasons are for building. And it was just very weird because the airdrop farming community, of which I am part, like, I'm not like a power player, but I kind of mosey around those Discord sometimes and listen in. Like, those guys had really thought that the season would end mid-July. And some of them did. And they had no reason to think so. Like, Blur hasn't said so. But every single day that goes by, all the farming that they've done is worth less. Because every single day that happens is more Blur points. We already know that it's going to be 300 million Blur tokens, but we don't know how many tokens each point is worth. And every day that goes by, the points that they've already farmed get more and more diluted. People thought it'd be ending, and Pac-Man and Blur basically said, we're not even going to give you any visibility. This is about tech, not about the millions of dollars you have at risk. And we're kind of in a weird situation right now where it feels like Blur is at odds with their biggest stakeholder, with their power users, because every day that goes by is more Blur token that actually gets vested by the team, by insiders, by investors, more token that because they vest 40% year one on a daily basis. And I think that when they release those 300 million to farmers, that's really going to potentially lower the price because that's a ton more supply that's going to hit the market. So you kind of have this situation right now where the farmers like want to get their token and convert it to either US dollar, but Blur calls all the shots and basically said that the end is not near. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic to watch. And I think you're starting to see hints that some of the farmers might be pulling back, but not really. Like, most, I think, are quite addicted and quite or enjoy it or find the risk reward positive. But you did see a few farmers who said, like, I'm out of here. Like, this is just disingenuous communication. We're putting so much money at risk here to provide liquidity. The least we can do is at least have some understanding of what this risk reward looks like, what the timeline looks like. And they're not getting that. So it's like an interesting situation there.
The next 3 to 6 months, it's like popcorn out time. Like, let's just see what happens. It's going to be so crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, thank you for obviously keeping us all in the loop here and letting us know when you're selling your NFT so we can get out as well. but let's move on. We've got an awesome Mythics Chronicles video that we want to show you a little behind the scenes. Let's take a look.
Do you know how many separate assets you guys have actually created? Do you want to take a guess?
I'm going to say 725.
There's 931 separate assets that we have.
Man, we got to get to 1,000. What are we going to do?
Oh, I know. You only need 69 more.
What's up?
Hey-o.
Yeah, hey-ho. Hey.
Hey.
Wow, they're going to see my baby fridge. And be like, this guy has a baby fridge? How you doing?
Oh, hi.
What a surprise. Come on in. Walk this way. My name is Luke Harrington, Illustrium, and I am an illustrator at Proof. Primarily, it means that I'm one of the artists who works on Mythics. Colin had been spreading rumors about my death.
Flashback.
As you can tell, he's no longer with us.
I'm coming for you, Colin. I'm coming for you, and I'm alive. Oh, the magic. The hoodie layer, this is the kind of thing we want to see. Like, how does the mask sit? And I can see right here, the ears poking up over the top. So we made the cool masks. We're all very happy with it. And the mask is a problem. So I guess I'd like to introduce Ryan. He is our director of engineering. As the art team kind of wrapped up the art, We knew that it had to be compiled and made into a collection so that we can kind of get more eyes on it, find the things that aren't working.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun working with you guys. Each mythic is randomly generated from a set of traits that are all based on the assets that the artist made. And for each attribute, such as, let's say, like the base of it, the wing, headwear, etc., we pick a random trait, and then we assign it to that slot. But in that process, there's a lot of combinations that do not work with each other. And so we have this concept of filtering that allows us to control exactly what traits are picked in the final mythic.
But then there's the other side of it, of getting excited about an idea, like what if this bird as a set exists, which happens a lot with the bodies or body-specific traits. And those do have to go together. So although we kind of just hand them all off in these separate pieces, being able to communicate that to you and have you kind of ensure it's working out correctly has been really invaluable. I think Eli asked me, said, it'll be perfect in the final thing, right? And I'm like, perfect? Perfect? I don't know. We are humans, so.
So this is part of the code that defines all of the rules that in some cases absolutely paired together, and some cases are not paired together. I go way down the list here. We have the must not pair list. We're wondering if you have assigned this one specific trait to this mythic that we're generating. None of these other traits can also be assigned to that mythic. And so to explain or show how this works, what I'm going to do is generate a really little collection of 10 mythics. And now when I go in to view our outputs, here's our 10 mythics that we just generated. So this is a really cool one. It's got a mask, but the ones I really want to focus on right now are these ones with what we call outerwear. So here's one with a hoodie, here's another one with a hoodie, and then another one with a hoodie. So we have these three really cool looking mythics that all have these hoodies, and a really important filtering rule that comes with outerwear is that we cannot pair any headwear or hats. And to show how that works, I'm going to scroll down here. This rule right here is the one that is preventing all of the hats and stuff from not being put onto a mythic with any outerwear. So I'm going to disable this. I'm going to rerun the exact same 10 mythics that we just did. And you can see they're kind of popping out here. And so now when we look at this, this is what happens. We've got a hat on this hoodie, and you can see clearly, you know, this doesn't line up here. It's like going inside the brim's like going inside the hoodie. It doesn't look right. Here's another example. You can see the same thing going on. Here's a crazy one. This is a really cool one. It's a helmet that is supposed to fit around the entire head of the mythic, but here we've got like a little ear poking out the hoodie and everything. So there's hundreds of these rules that we've created over many, many iterations.
We got excited about a lot of stuff, and then when we implemented it and Ryan showed it to us, we realized a few things that were near and dear to us were not going to work. One of them being, and this is a big one, is the skelly birds. So I had drawn this full skeleton, skeleton arms and all the postures, full skeleton rib cage and skeleton head, but it didn't look right with the eyes that we had in the collection. So I started to make kind of eyes that were just for Skelly. And then also the clothing didn't really fit. Anything that was behind something, you know, the skeleton reveals what's behind the bird. So if there was a backpack and we only draw that corner of it, because that's all that's showing, suddenly it reveals that there is no rest of it. So we actually killed that fairly recently.
One attribute that jumps out to me a lot is the magic attributes. The magic attribute is a really, really cool one, and there's a couple of different variations of it, but what makes it really cool is that it kind of wraps around the mythic body, and in doing so, it can become really tricky because you have to simultaneously have one flat layer that is both in front of and appears to be behind the mythic.
Hey man, thanks a lot for stopping by and talking DNP with us here. I guess we got a lot of work to do still, so let's get after it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been great. And let's go do it.
That was awesome.
That was so cool.
That was my first time seeing that video.
Yeah, me too.
I got to say, it highlights a couple things. One, you just see how much work goes into this behind the scenes.
Yes.
Like, it is not just as easy as people think. Yeah. The DNP, when they said at the end, the Do Not Pair list is, I did it for the first collection of Moonbirds with Justin, and it was just the two of us. It is just, I mean, when you're looking through 10,000 and you're making sure that these things don't overlap, like I literally was just bird after bird after bird going through and going and finding these. And we thankfully have a much more elegant way now with code and whatnot to check for some of this stuff. But
yeah, I mean, I think you can just sort of tell that, you know, Justin and you and just everything that we do, we want to make sure that it's really great. And so even with Moonbirds, like as I'm scrolling through the Moonbirds collection, it's just such a really good aesthetically pleasing collection, is because you guys really kind of took the time to make sure that they all looked really good.
There's a couple I go back and I look at and it still bugs me.
Really?
I can't say which ones they are. I don't want to kill them, but like there's a couple where I'm like, ooh.
But I think this one is going to be even harder, because I think, what did we say, 37,000 that we're generating?
Yeah, exactly. So, obviously, not that many will be minted, but yeah.
Not that many will be minted, but even more than 37,000 will have to be gone through to actually pare down to 37,000, and then the entire community will then kind of curate that as they choose.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of work to go down to, you know, just a few thousand, or maybe 10,000, 13,000, who knows? But like, yeah. it's going to be a really fun time. And I think that means the collection is going to be just absolutely perfect. So I'm excited for it.
The art is just so damn good. Like,
it's so good.
I feel like when looking at some of that stuff now, like this is the first time I saw some of those attributes just now.
Yeah.
And I was like, hot damn, like our team did a really good job on the art.
I'm having a really fun time. The engineers have a generator, like, I don't know, platform.
Yeah.
And I've just been scrolling through. And sometimes you'll see me, if I'm really excited and if I've just been scrolling through, I'll just drop one in the Discord, just to kind of get everyone excited. Cause like, I think people don't think that all of them look this good, but like every single one of them will look good. Like I'll just pick a random one and be like, see, like we're not finding like rares for the previews. Like they're all this good. And so I'm excited for everyone to kind of see that.
I'm glad they killed the skeleton full.
Yeah,
body.
That one looked intense.
It was a little too much. Like, I don't remind me of like having like a chicken dinner or something instead of finishing the bones.
Yes,
and just like seeing the bird carcass lay there. It was, I don't know, something about it was a little bit.
Yeah, ribs.
I think
weird.
It was the wing. The wing on the side just like got me. I don't know. Anyway, that was awesome.
Kevin.
Yes.
Kevin, you kind of piqued my interest with that comment, like about different Moonbirds traits. But so maybe not talking about traits, but are there any like big picture kind of lessons that you have from the art from Moonbirds in terms of number of traits or rarity or things like that you kind of walk away from and think of? Obviously not going to specific traits you like or don't like.
Yeah, I mean, when we were first putting together the collection, and we knew it was going to be generated, and we wouldn't have absolute control over the exact numbers. So you know, when you say, okay, give me, well, there were certain ones where we could hard define. You could say, okay, I'm going to manually create these.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like our Jade collection, or some of the ones
the glitches,
we just like the glitches. Like we had those defined and we inserted those into the collection. And then other times you're like, okay, I don't know, how many of these should exist. Like you kind of more or less know like a range. You're like, okay, if we put this and give this much weight in the system, mm-hmm. we expect there to be somewhere between 300 and 500 of them generated. Right. And it's not till the final generation that you actually know. And so for us, it was, at that time, what we did is we honestly looked at CryptoPunks and we knew that there were certain attributes that jumped out that were sought after by people, like hoodie attributes and things of that nature, that people are like, okay, I'm already drawn to these. And there were ones that we wanted to continue forward. And then there was other ones where we were like, okay, should we do a ton of these because they are so popular and they look so cool? Or does that devalue the attribute and should we keep it more scarce, right?
Yeah.
So it was really tough. And at the end of the day, I remember what I did is I was up in Vancouver at a conference and I was working out of the hotel room And I was on the call with Justin, and we were trying to tweak these numbers. And I'm like, we need someone to look at this stuff, right? And so I called Derek up, and I'm like, Derek, can you get on as a collector? Because we're so close to it, you know? We're looking at so many birds, and you're just like, I can't. Like, I've seen too many birds. And so Derek jumps on, and this was like the night before we did the generation or something like that. And he's like, okay, dial that one back. That one should be a super rare. I would do more of this one. And we kind of debated it back and forth with him. And so he really helped us form a lot of, many people don't know that.
That's cool.
That he really helped a lot of that. And then we had other things that we wanted to do. Like, you know, there was other attributes that we wanted to make sure had a presence in there as well. That just like some of our, like our do-rag attributes and some of the other stuff that we worked with other collaborators to have come in there and actually make an appearance, or a crummy squiggle little attribute we wanted to do. And so, there's no perfect science to it, to be honest. Like, you just really don't know what's going to resonate with people until after the collection is in their hands.
And it's funny, actually. I think nude birds might be probably the most common. But like culturally, it feels like most people want something clean, right?
Yeah.
But I think that especially the way that we launched and the way that we kind of talked about traits, people wanted ones with traits. But like, more and more every time I look at them, or every time I look at a nude one, especially if it's like just beautifully aesthetic, I'm like, there's something about them, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I love the nude birds, even though they're the most
nude birds
ones.
Well, honestly, this is just real. I'm going to give you some people the real, like, this is
transparency.
True.
Let's
transparency.
Go.
There was a few that looked like penises. Like, I'm being dead serious. They just absolutely look like penises. And we had to do not pairs. I said, Justin, we can't have these, man. And he's like, oh my God, yes, you're right. And so we had to do the do not pair. Because the nudes have that like nice round, and it was just, that's a true story.
That is so...
I mean, that's real.
I feel you. No,
I don't know how much
tan
to add
color,
there.
No tan color nude birds, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see that we avoided some things there. So
amazing. All right. Happy birthday, Victor Liu.
Hard transition there.
Speaking of penises, happy birthday, Victor Liu. It is your birthday. You said that you were here watching 100 Proof, and I thought I'd just give you a little
happy birthday.
Yeah, give you a little. A little viral moment for your birthday. Happy birthday, dude.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. We've got to move on to some picks. This is what we haven't done this in a while. We're going to pick some NFTs that are sub one ETH that we believe, not investment advice, that we believe are collectible over the long term and that we're excited about. So we've got all three of us came up with some art. Do you want to kick things off?
Yeah, I'll do it. You know, this is a layered pick. This is a layered pick. Let me do it. This is a layered pick. So yesterday, when we were at this IRL Alpha show, somebody had asked us, you know, why did we go CC0? You know, Kevin made a really, really great point about how powerful X Copy's art is. And even though it's CC0, it is making a statement, and there's something really, really incredibly powerful about it. You know, in the spirit of that, in the spirit of you know, just highlighting amazing art despite what kind of rights it has, my one ETH under one ETH pick is Max Payne. It's also doubly you know, relevant because, as we all know, if you have a Max Payne with a Moonbird, you get to unlock a really cool background. And that's also, again, in the spirit of CC0, in the spirit of like true Web3 culture, the on-chain composability, all of that beautiful stuff. It is a great, great collection. I think there's something really kind of amazing about just the way that XCopy engages with the audience. You know, this is just like a massive troll. You know, I think a lot of people in this world like to speculate, even though they're art collectors. You know, people, there was like this time where there was this major, major burn meta where there would be a bunch of something and then you'd get to burn it and do something. And he'd also kind of participated in that too. And I think a lot of people have been waiting for maybe one day for something to happen. It's been over a year now since it's dropped, and it's just sitting there. And
he did
I think
one
there's
thing.
Something.
He did that max pain drop where
yeah.
he said there's going to be maximum pain because only one person wins.
Oh.
And so if you held a max pain, you were put in that drawing for that
yeah.
drop.
Yeah, you're right. So is it over? Who knows? It doesn't matter. There's just something amazing about that. So I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at this collection, in this edition, it is just so classic X-Copy. It's mm-hmm. like, this is like such a beautiful piece. It has a lot of the stats that I look for in terms of like unique collectors is 59%, almost 60%. You got only 1% listed. You know, it's under a half an ETH now. If you're looking to get into the X-Copy ecosystem, I mean, it's such a great price point to get in for, you know, someone who's one of ones or going for $500,000 or more, right?
So exactly. It's a true collectible, you know, at this point.
Also, I should tell you something that's important here is like, yeah, when you do pair this with a Moonbird, you do unlock that special background that is stored, you know, on chain that we actually have in our contract. That background is not a proof designed background. We actually went to X-Copy designed and sent us the asset for that background. So when you're actually transforming your bird and getting that background, you're getting a piece of X-Copy art behind the scenes as that background, which is pretty cool.
That's a good thing to clarify, because I don't know if everyone kind of understands that. And I think, you know, people thought we were doing an X-Copy drop, still might, who knows? I don't know. But this is still, everyone can still have a little piece of that. So you have a little kind of double dip. You get a little bit of X-Copy with Max Payne, and then you get that on your background. I think it's really cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, do you want to chat about your pick?
I don't really have like a huge pick. I mean, I was actually just kind of looking at some of these Delu Crest pieces that I've always liked that are now below one ETH. But he's put so much art out there. But I was gonna, we're gonna talk about O'Pepins here, just because I think what I'm intrigued by with O'Pepins, you know, I think what with any big NFT, like O'Pepins are 16,000 of them, like you want to buy stuff that someone down the road is going to want to buy. I mean, obviously you want to buy stuff that you have interest in, but you also want stuff that someone down the road is going to buy. And I think like that what this project is doing is creating so many different verticals of collectability. You know, there are going to be 200 different arts or piece different types of art that come out. Each of those 200 is going to have 80 pieces. And I can just see a world where there are people out there who want to own all of the 200, like mm-hmm. we've seen with Art Blocks. You know, it's an interest. I like, and this is one thing that Jack and I talked about when he was on the podcast, is like, just like PFPs in general as kind of one of the best forms of viral marketing out there. And you're starting to see more and more O'Pepins pop up on my Twitter. I've had to unfollow people because all they do is tweet about Jack Butcher and how awesome O'Pepins are and Jack Butcher is. And I'm just like, I cannot take this every day, all the time.
I mean, I hope that I met him in New York. He has a great, cool, like demeanor. And I think that he can handle it. But I hope that it all works out for everybody who is such insane fans of Jack Butcher. Like, I think it's getting to a crazy level. And that's what makes me bullish, but I just, you know, let's hope that he's, you know, he's Teflon. You know?
What are you worried about? Like, I don't know what you're worried about.
They love him too much. What if he really upsets them and then they get really mad? You know, that happens sometimes with people
for sure. But he's Jack the Butcher.
But he's Jack the Butcher. It's fine.
I mean, I've liked ever since I like his Instagram stuff really resonates with me from Visualized Value. So I think he's someone who just understands. He just understands people quite well, and he understands viral marketing quite well. I mean, anytime everyone's obsessed with a 16,000 NFT collection, like you have to wonder who the incremental buyer stays over time, you know. And I think that those are all concerns. But with this, I do think like when the dust settles, I can see people saying, "I want to own all 200 projects," you know. And you just and I can see that kind of being something that just it just feels like there are layers of collectability here that could maintain their relevance over time. So I don't know. It's definitely one of my favorite. I mean, as someone who does a daily show, I love that he's constantly giving me something new to talk about. But also, it's just an interesting project to follow at a lot of different levels.
Yeah, I do love. At first, when Checks came out, I wasn't really familiar with a lot of the stuff that, you know, he was working on. And I was like, oh, what is this? It just looks like a Twitter check, you know? And then as I kind of dug into some of the mechanics and gamification that he was applying to this stuff, it's clear that like your point about, you know, just understanding the social dynamics of people and collectors, is he's legit. Like he really knows the game quite well.
Yeah.
And also these are beautiful. Like, at the same time, like it's not just, you know, I'm drawn a lot more to these than I was to the kind of checks mechanic. So,
yeah.
And we did see this, Sam, your point with the art blocks. I remember when the season was coming to an end and they finally said, hey, we're putting a hard cap on the season. Everything that was just sitting at like next to nothing just like got a instant boost because yeah. they're like, oh shit, like people are going to want to hold the whole set, right?
So, exactly.
That's a good point.
Before we move on, because I know and we're that, actually yeah. going to talk about OPEPNs, I want you to talk about your 1-8 pick.
Yeah. Yeah, real quick. So I would say, you know, to me, when I look at this market, I start to think about, you know, are there certain collections that have been around for quite some time that have historic relevance, but at the same time are just not getting a lot of attention right now? So what are the ones that when we go back in time, we will say, oh, damn, like we should have been paying attention to this because, you know, this is some of the first, right? And we've talked about these collections before, but they're mm-hmm. kind of just like hanging out where they are. So crypto art, this original kind of, I don't know if this was a generative collection. It was basically using a bit of the blockchain data to kind of visualize the blockchain data. It's not necessarily the most, like if you zoom in on one of the pieces, it's got a little tiny design for each bit of the blockchain data inside of these squares here. But it was very early. So, you know, some of this, I don't know how we'd necessarily like put that in a frame. And if people walk into your house eventually and say like, oh wow, you have one of those, you know, to me, it's not, I don't know. I'm just not really drawn
doesn't
to it.
But pass the wall test.
It doesn't necessarily pass the wall test for me, but it is something that is, if you take a look from a historic perspective and when it was actually created and minted, mm-hmm. it is one of the very earliest kind of quote unquote generative type projects, you know, July of 2018. Mm-hmm. And so you got a floor price of 0.07, you know, which is just crazy. I don't know. I own a few of these. And the reason I'm just sitting on them is because at these prices, like why not pick up a couple for something that's historic? And then if we jump to one other collection, I just want to mention.
But first, I also want to say Seb is one of our yes. proof artists. He's a deep member of our community, of our especially our Proof Collective community. So shout out to Seb who created these. And we're just so, I mean, we want everyone to know about this historic piece of art that you've done.
Yeah, Seb has been such a nice person to interact with yeah. over the last few years. Like I started chatting with him way back in the day.
Yeah,
before Proof and such a great human. So always happy to put a spotlight on great humans. Another one, this one here, the K Compositions. So this is April 2019. People are catching on to this one. So this one's only 250 items. The copy in this says it claims it was the second ever full generative NFT project. You know, I've heard people say, well, it was the third, and like there's arguments around what was and is and wasn't actual generative art in the early days. But regardless, these are now at 3 ETH. There's only 250 of them as a floor. Very, very, very early on the generative side. So, you know, when you look at the peers here, what else do we have? We've got, you know, autoglyphs. Autoglyphs are not 3 ETH. You know, it's yeah. It's like you have to imagine that if you're playing the long game here, a decade from now, when we're all going back and looking at the history and the nice thing about the blockchain is you have that proven provenance and that, you know, the timestamp and when these actually occurred. If you look at something like this, you'll be like, wow, this was like, you know, first three generative projects. And at 3 ETH and only 250 supply, I don't know, man. I think I have two of them. And I was buying them when they were way sub 1 ETH way back a couple of years ago. But again, just reminding people, go back in time. Look at the early stuff. Yeah. Because when the bull does return, you'll see that I think a lot of value is going to accrue here as well. And I'd apply that to things like early Gremlin stuff as well.
Let's go.
Like cryptodes are sub 1 ETH as well, which is
that's
another
a travesty.
Really
fun. Look at these guys. Ooh, with a little mushroom on top. That's dope.
We got Sam's kids in the background too. We got stuff falling over in the studio. Everything's breaking down.
It's Friday. Friday vibes. A little Doge one. That one's cute. I agree. I think it's going to be really important. If we are thinking about the future, we should always kind of think about the past. This is a pretty good time to start either anticipating what could be historical or going back and finding things that are historic.
Especially at these price points.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, people get bored waiting.
And you go back that far and then what do you got? You got punks and that's expensive as hell. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, where are these buys way back in the day?
Yeah.
You know, Mooncats, another very early project on the PFP side. Yeah. There's just a handful kitties. Of them.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's important to also, I think, not only when you're looking back at that, is it historic? And then is the artist or is the team or whatever, are they still active? Are they still around? If they are, it's a pretty good bet that that's going to be significant in one point. So, that's a good little non-financial advice pro tip for you if you're looking for things to potentially collect.
Awesome. All right. So I know we wanted to do a little bit of a dive into O'Pepin's, right? And actually talk about it, because this is something where it is more than meets the eye in terms of like a collector. You have to understand the mechanics behind it. And then Sam, do you want to like just give us the quick, I know we already jumped into it and you said you're excited about this, but again, just walk us through, what does someone have to do if you're a new collector and you're like, okay, I've seen these as PFPs. We all have. We've seen people talking about them. But how do I get involved, and where are we in this project life cycle? Like, what's the play here?
Yeah, and for the record, I also own none, so I just want to make that clear. This is not pumping anything I own, just kind of a project I think is interesting. So you have the revealed and the unrevealed, and I guess start talking about the unrevealed. Each unrevealed is one of multiple types. It can be a 1 of 40, a 1 of 20, a 1 of 10, 5, 4, or a 1 of 1. Okay, and it's unrevealed, but you know it's going to fall into one of those buckets. And then there are 200 different groupings of art. We've been through 8 of them. I think we are on the 9th right now. And you can sign up for each one. And when you sign up, if you have the 1 of 1, you sign up to get the 1 of 1 from that group. If you have the 1 of 40, you sign up to get a 1 of 40 for that group. And if, you know, I think there's some sort of, I think you have to have like every art has to be fully signed up for times 2x or something like, I think it's times 2x in order for them to actually use the art. Otherwise they'll find a new one. And then they just do a random drawing. So if you have a 1 of 40, you sign up for the new art that's coming, you get put in a pool with probably thousands of other people who signed up. And if you get lucky, then you will get one of those 1 of 40s. And I think we've seen right now that the very first art was the most valuable. And the earlier stuff is more valuable, at least, you know, it's not like basically in order, but earlier tends to be better. So pretty much everyone seems to be signing up for the new art that comes along because it's a chance to get the newer one. But the main thing to think about is, am I getting a 1 of 40, a 1 of 20, 10, 1 of 5, 1 of 4, 1 of 1? And then pick which art you like, put yourself in the drawing for that, and then see if you get it.
One question for you there, Sam. So if I go in and I buy one of these 1 of 40, right? So I've got this token that allows me to enter into these drawings. If I am selected, is that then transformed into the 1 of 40 and I have to go buy another 1 of 40 token if I want to keep playing the game? Is that right?
Yeah. So the metadata on yours will change to be that art. And I think that's a permanent change. And if you want to enter for future drawings, then you have to go get a unrevealed OPEP.
So much fun. I mean, Jack is so good at this. This is the kind of stuff that I think that, you know, for me, as someone that does like a little bit of the game, like this is like such great mechanics.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be really into it. And I think, you know, I've read a lot about him and the way that he sort of sees things. And I think he always starts with, what's the feeling that I'm trying to evoke? And then start to build some sort of mechanic around that versus let me build a mechanic and then kind of fit it into whatever narrative that I'm trying to make. So I think kind of knowing that, there's this sort of purity of it, and it always kind of comes full circle because you already know he effectively started from the end and then worked backwards. And I think that's really, really smart. And I think it's kind of getting a lot of he's getting a lot of respect for it because it's a long-term thinking, but still allows you to be quite flexible as each season or each one kind of develops, right? So it's a really cool mechanic. So props to him.
Yeah, and also go ahead, Sam.
The other thing I would throw in is I think with all these things, there are a couple different things at play. Like, you know, we were talking about checks a lot 6 months ago and checks was all the rage, but then that checks thing kind of ended and there are still participants there, but it's lost attention. The price kind of grinds lower now. So I think right now you're just in the thick of things with O'Pepin, you know, and there's always this question, is this relevant in 2 years? And I think that's a bit of a separate question, but now like he brought Bats Due In to do the art for one. I think, you know, with bats do come bats do collectors, you know, and yes. then perhaps they get turned on. So I think now you do have kind of mechanics in place for more attention to be drawn to the project, you know, among the people who are in the space. And it kind of unites kind of the PFP world with the art world reasonably well. Obviously, to me, there's always the question of, does this remain relevant in a couple of years? But I think for now, you're in that moment where it feels like this is where the action is.
It's almost like 6529 vibes with the meme, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think it's probably a big crossover of participants, which makes it fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does, but you also have to be careful because we saw just how much, when those things that are so in focus become not in focus, you know, what that can do to the price. But not to be nagged, as I think it's important to kind of
100%.
Give the full picture of how I think about these things.
It's challenging because in one hand, if it does make the leap and the Butcher becomes like a household name, I hope he's not offended.
No,
by that.
I can't imagine he would be.
It's kind
I'm
of
sure
badass,
he's heard it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if he becomes more of a household name and like it's the, you know, he already is, but like, you know, hits Snowfro Tyler type level of mm-hmm. of kind of fame in our world. You know, these things they'll probably increase quite a bit. So yeah. It's like, it's hard to know when to dip in. And you hold a couple though, right?
I have a couple blank ones. I've never actually won. You know, that's the hard thing is there's 16,000 of them. You have to like the chances of you getting and being part of each one of these is low. Right.
Yeah.
But I do think that he's announced that he wants to finish this by the end of the year. So, you know, it's not that much longer that you have to wait for you to actually reveal one.
This is going
to
be rapid fire then.
Yeah. 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 There's another one going on right now. And I think, yeah, probably maybe like one a week or something.
I can't imagine because he says 200 and I think there's only like 180 days left in the year. So I'll be, if he does it, he's going to have to start going like six at a time. But
we'll see. I'll see if I can find that tweet to see what he said.
Crazy. Well, one other quick reminder, Sam sat down with Jack and had a chat. This was before the old Pepin launch, but if you want to go back and watch that, we will definitely link that in the show notes so you can check it out. All right. I think that's it for this show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It was so awesome to have you in this seat.
Thank you.
Let's kick Derek out more often and have you in the hot seat here. And Sam, always great to see you. And when are you heading home, by the way? You out in Wisconsin for a while?
One more week. Yeah.
One more week.
So I think next Saturday we're going to fly back. But good thing about United these days, you can always change it. So you never know. But I think next Saturday.
Love it. All right. Good to see you. And of course, every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific is when we record 100 Proof. And I think Derek will be back next week.
Yeah.
So I'll be there as well. So looking forward to it and have a great weekend. We'll see you soon.
See you guys.